From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley.
Napa, California.
I live in the Castro.
Fillmore District.
Bernal Heights.
Oakland, California.
Coming up, we get in line with Richmond residents seeking compensation after the Chevron refinery fire.
Chevron, I hope they step up the plate and do the right thing, because they have a lot of people in this town that got sick because of their negligence.
Then we go to an East Bay candlelight vigil to honor the sick worshipers killed in Wisconsin.
Just because somebody came and shot down six of our people doesn't mean that we are angry at anybody, right?
After a long week, we can all use a little relief. To the rescue, comedian Nate O'Green.
This is an important lesson that I want you to remember. When you're dealing with the police, size matters. It is no time to be a vegan.
That and more today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. If you got a look at today's San Francisco Chronicle, you probably saw a photo taken last night of a long line of people outside a lawyer's office in Richmond near a sign that says Chevron claims filed here. That office belongs to Richmond lawyer Nicholas Haney, and all of those people are Richmond residents, ready to sue Chevron for illness and trauma they say they suffered during Monday night's refinery fire. KALW's Julie Kane stopped by to talk to the people in line and brought back these voices.
My name is Marisol, and I live in North Richmond.
Marisol.
Yeah, Marisol Jarillo. And I believe we're here to get an application. I honestly don't know what it is for, but I just thought I should come and take advantage of whatever it's going to be for. I was having headaches and nausea. My son, he was just really, really scared, and he started coughing a lot. So we just put the towels on the doors so no smoke could go in. So
you see the explosion, and then the alarms came up. Seems sound like you don't even know what to do. Stay at home or run away.
What is your name?
Pedro.
Pedro. What's your last name?
Lopez. We turned on the TV, and then on the TV was came up saying that we have to stay at home, and also I called to 911, and they said that to stay at home, close the doors, close window, turn off everything, air conditioning, anything electrical, yeah.
Was there anything in Spanish, or was everything in English?
Was in English.
Would you tell me your name?
Sandra
Colindres.
Colindres, yes.
Yeah, I live around the corner of Chevron. I just pass by, and then I see the line, and then I want to know what is, you know, what is about it. And then they told me that they is about the fire yesterday of Chevron, and so that's why I'm here. We don't want to leave the house, but we really was very scared of what can happen, even though after everything they said is safe, you know, we never know. So we was kind of scared. Yeah, and even though my son, he said he was feeling something. Tell her.
Like itchy throat, drowsiness, that's it.
I can't believe people do stuff like this.
Okay, everyone, this is the information sheet you need to fill out. This right here is basically saying that we represent you. No one should be able to call you or anything, any kind of insurance company. If they do, tell them you have a lawyer and they need to contact us.
I want everybody to read this thing up here.
You have a sign posted up here.
And I'm only taking claims where people actually had respiratory problems. If what I'm saying is, I know that there was a cloud of smoke, but if it didn't bother you, you don't have a claim. If you were affected by it, and you got sick, or you got sick because of it, then we're taking your claim.
Would you introduce yourself to me?
I'm Nicholas Haney. Because I have an office in Richmond, and where this accident, this fire occurred, I've had a line of people. Actually, I started getting phone calls last night. People calling me and ill, and a lot of older people with respiratory problems. Even my secretary, who's got serious respiratory problems, was affected. So I've had people come in all day long, and I got slammed.
So you're not usually open this late at night?
Oh, no. We're out of here usually at 5:30 or so. You know, so no, we are trying to accommodate people that. that maybe were working today or whatever. But actually, I told the last person online some time ago that tell everybody after you that they're not going to be seen today. Well, there was 100 people after that, that last person. And so I just had to go back and tell them, look, I've had these people working over 12 hours today, and they wanted to go home. So
what kind of
million
can they make? What are you thinking?
These people, most of them, they either had episodes of coughing, sneezing, choking, and I see a lot of people in here that are still coughing. You know, so what can they expect? It kind of every case is an individual case. It kind of depends on what they went through, and we're having a lot of people come in. We haven't sorted it all out yet. I'm having people fill out forms. I'm going to be looking at it. We need to figure out where people were, where they live, where they were at the time of the fire. So I don't, you know, we don't have all the answers yet. Chevron, I hope they step up the plate and do the right thing, because they have a lot of people in this town that got sick because of their negligence.
If you'd like to present your claim to lawyer Nicholas Haney, you can call 510-237-1624. But this is what you might get if you make that call.
We're unavailable to accept your calls right now, but if you leave a brief message and your number, we will get back to you as soon as possible. We are accepting claims for the Chevron fire of August 6, 2012. If you've been experiencing respiratory problems and have sought medical treatment, we will be able to claim on your behalf. Thank you.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Pollution and the environment have always been big issues for Californians. A statewide survey conducted by the Public Policy Institute of California last month showed that African Americans and Latinos worry more than other ethnic groups about how air pollution threatens their health. KALW's RTM's Kana Hobbs was at the World Affairs Council in San Francisco, where the study was unveiled.
Public Policy Institute of California survey data shows approximately half of Californians see air pollution as a serious health threat. The majority of polled Latinos and African Americans believe that people in lower income areas are disproportionately affected by air pollution. Reverend Daniel Buford from Oakland is Vice President of Communities for a Better Environment California. He believes that ethnic minorities are more concerned about the environment because they often live in polluted areas.
We've got a lot of people who are in the communities of color who are disappearing and dying as a result of pollution and exposure to these carcinogens. And they're disappearing and they're dying mysteriously, the same way that people disappear and die in the Bermuda Triangle.
Reverend Buford says the Bay Area has its own toxic triangle, consisting of Richmond, Oakland, and San Francisco's Bayview Hunters Point. Low-income areas where, he says, environmental protection laws are not equally implemented. Survey data shows that 88% of Latinos, 86% of blacks, and 72% of Asians see global warming as a serious future threat to the economy and quality of life in California. Only 66% of white respondents share the same opinion.
People of color are actually, frankly, some of the strongest environmentalists that we see in the state of California.
Roger Kim is executive director of the Asian Pacific Environmental Network.
And that has really massive implications about the future of the state and the future of environmental programs in California.
One of those new environmental programs is California's cap and trade system. It allows the government to limit industrial greenhouse gas emissions, but it enables corporations to sell their emission credits to higher polluters. 58% of survey respondents had never heard of the program, which is scheduled to begin in November. In San Francisco, I'm Artem Skonohaus for Cross Currents.
Find the full Public Policy Institute study online at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. It's been a week of multiple disasters, both here in the Bay Area and nationwide. Earlier this week, shock and grief gripped the Wisconsin Indian Sikh community after a white supremacist gunman opened fire at a Sikh temple in the city of Oak Creek. Six worshippers were killed in what the FBI is calling an act of domestic terrorism. Last night, the Bay Area cities of Hayward, San Jose, and Fremont joined more than 100 other cities across the country to commemorate the temple killings. Organizers say the idea was for all the temples to shine their lights collectively in a show of strength. KALW's Kyung Jin Lee attended the Fremont gathering, where around 1,000 people came to support the victims and build community.
Waheguru Ji Ka Khalsa, Bole Sonihal.
The candlelight vigil on the shores of Lake Elizabeth brought out all walks of the Sikh community: young professionals, monolingual immigrants, and multi-generational families. As daylight turned to dusk, parents hushed their children, and speakers expressed solidarity to the crowd of mourners.
And it's not enough to just never forget. You have to remember, yes, but you also have to reflect. And once you have reflected, you must also respond.
Pradev Singh is a 26-year-old software engineer. He says for him, the Wisconsin shooting was a smaller scale of 9/11, but...
Just because somebody came and shot down six of our people doesn't mean that we are angry at anybody, right? And we are Americans, we are proud to be who we are, and we are proud to be part of this country.
Since 9/11, Sikhs have become unwitting victims of hate crimes aimed at the Muslim community. More than 300 cases were documented within the first month of the attacks, and the recent violence reopened old wounds. But for UC Santa Cruz-bound student Japneet Kaur, it doesn't matter whether the intended targets were Sikhs or Muslims.
You know, we're not here to, as so many people have been doing, make a distinction between ourselves and Muslims, because they don't have a right to suffer just because they're Muslim.
The Sikh Coalition is a national civil rights group founded after 9/11. It estimates almost three-quarters of turban-wearing Sikh boys in the Bay Area have endured harassment because of their faith. Harjeet Singh is a board member of the Fremont Temple, which is called a gurdwara. He says when you're persecuted for your physical appearance, there are two ways to respond.
Either you give up your article of faith or you feel more proud to wear them. Given the Sikh's background, right, we take pride in our turban and our open beard because this is our supplication to God, the way it has been made, the way it should be.
There were turbans of many colors together in Fremont last night. And beyond that, people of many faiths, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, and Buddhist monks in saffron robes. They shared tenets of Sikhism, which is based on equality and believe salvation comes through the expression of love and service to those less fortunate. During the two-hour gathering to remember victims of recent attacks, there were no angry calls for retribution or justice. In Fremont, I'm Kyung Jin Lee for Cross Currents.
If you'd like to report a hate crime, start at your local police department. And we have a link to where you can learn what steps to take next at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. No matter how long you've lived in the Bay Area, there are probably certain neighborhoods that you've never visited. Here in San Francisco, Visitation Valley is one of those places. It's in the southeasternmost part of the city. The highway exit? Well, it's the Cow Palace. This neighborhood is actually just down the hill from our studios at KALW, so we sent our community storytelling team here, a pop-up radio project, to meet some of these residents.
Here?
Here?
Here.
Okay, together. Okay.
Here.
A pop-up radio project
from KALW.
In this story, we'll get to know 66-year-old Visitation Valley resident Marlene Tran in her own words, and also through the words of her friend and confidant, Lotus Yi Fong.
Well, actually, when I first came, I was almost 19 years old from Hong Kong. I remember the ship docked at one of the wharfs. So my first reaction was, wow, is this what San Francisco is all about? My full name is Marlene Tran, T-R-A-N. I have been a resident in Visitation Valley for over 20 years. I was born in Vietnam, but I left when I was a tiny little kid. And then I was raised in Hong Kong. That's where I picked up Cantonese, and I came to America. The immigration tried to make it hard for us to stay, even though my stepfather was a veteran of the Second World War. He worked for the American President Lines, and also, you know, he had a little house for us. As a little kid, you know, I felt very, how shall I say, passionate about helping the underdog. That's always it. I said, why are these people so despicably poor? Nobody helped them. And all my life, it's just something that's in me that I feel that, they deserve. They're just humans. You know.
My name's Lotus Yi Fong. I made sure that Marlene Tran got interviewed here.
My initial efforts was to help the neighbors and work with them to see how we can best get services and resources that we need to have.
We are both active in the community, so we're at the same meetings, Chinese American Democratic Club, Chinese for Affirmative Action.
For 35 years, I taught at a public school for newly arrived immigrant students, predominantly from China. For 35 years or more, I was working almost 14 hours a day with, doing with education.
I only moved to San Francisco 30 years ago, but Marlene was teaching kindergarten at Chinese Education Center, and I watched her teach the little five-year-olds in kindergarten, and when the grandparents came to pick them up or drop them off, she would always say in Chinese, "Don't just put on their coat and their shoes. You have to teach them to put on their coat and their shoes."
I taught citizenship for over 20 years. I told people, yes, after you become a citizen, you can petition for your family members.
But I guess Marlene and I both have a sensitivity. I'm not as fluent as she is.
I am able to speak Thai, Chinese, Cantonese, Mandarin, several other dialects with different people.
And it's trying to help the substantial Chinese population in San Francisco who have varying levels of Chinese dialects, other Asian languages, and English.
So when you're new to the country, you know everybody knows you're new if you move to a new neighborhood. Living in this community, we all have to pitch in, many community leaders and myself, because every morning when we led the pledge, the last few words were liberty and justice for all.
I always tell this joke, and it makes Marlene mad, but I say that she should have been a nun because she's totally committed her life to helping people and helping the community. But she doesn't have to be a nun to do that.
People say, you'll retire this year, you don't do anything for yourself, but I find it very challenging to be able to help, be able to be involved with life. It's invigorating.
Those were San Francisco residents Marlene Tran and Lotus Yi Fong. The story was produced by Erica Mu for our new community storytelling initiative, Hear Here, a pop-up radio project. Our Hear Here producers are popping up all over San Francisco and Oakland to listen to you. Find out how you can participate by visiting our website, kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. The Bay Area is known for inspiring and supporting talent in many fields. For instance, local comedians Nato Green and W. Kamau Bell have been cracking up the Bay for years with a comedy tour called Laughter Against the Machine.
Is anybody else like me? We have a secret hope that the economy tanks bad enough that Native Americans pull all that casino money together and buy the land back and ship us all back to wherever the hell we think we came from. All you white people say, I'm from Ireland, but I don't know anybody in Ireland. I never met anybody in Ireland. I just like St. Patrick's Day. I don't even speak Irish. How do you speak Irish?
Recently, their act caught the attention of producer Chris Rock and landed them a new show called Totally Biased on the FX network. One of the writers for the show is Bell's longtime collaborator and comic, Nato Green.
My wife and I are a typical San Francisco couple. We recycle. We are into light bondage. And our safe word is Zinfandel. Uh, I drive a Prius. I would honk at protests in support when I drive by, except if you drive a Prius, the honk is implied.
Their comedic style is rooted in the Bay Area.
A Prius honk just sounds like...
With topics ranging from the workers at Trader Joe's union actions and personal stories of resistance. Aside from working on a TV show, Green has a new comedy album out, and he came by the studio to talk about it with KALW's Ben Trefney.
So you draw some of your material from some of your history as an activist. Tell me a little bit about that and where you end up drawing your material from.
I grew up on the left. My parents were activists when I was a kid. I actually, walked a picket line probably 100 feet from where we're sitting now in 1978 when the teachers went on strike. And then when I got out of college, I decided I wanted to be a union activist. I went and got a job at Noah's Bagels and got fired and learned how to lose, which is an important lesson. And then spent several years as a car messenger, or unionizing the biking car messengers with the longshoremen, and then co-founded Young Workers United, which still exists, the country's first worker center for young and immigrant workers in the low-wage service sector.
So while you were doing this activism and organization, were you working on comedy? How did you turn to comedy? Because, I mean, when one thinks of union organizers, I don't think they usually think about ha-ha.
Absolutely. I do feel like as a left-wing, Jewish kid from San Francisco growing up in an intellectual family, there are two career options ahead of you, which are comedy and revolution. And being ambitious, I on some level chose both. I have always been a fan of comedy. I grew up in San Francisco during the comedy boom of the 80s and was, really hanging out. I started hanging out at Cobb's Comedy Club when I was 12.
What was that, like Robin Williams and Whoopi Goldberg?
Well, those folks were already the stars of comedy. I mean, the people that I got to see coming up were like Greg Proops and Greg Barrett and Margaret Cho and Arj Barker and Tom Kenny and Paula Poundstone and Jake Johansson. And it was just, in those days, you'd go to Comedy Day in the Park and there would be 50,000 people there. And initially I thought, oh, I'm just going to go down to the open mic and get it out of my system. And then I got the bug. And, it was about 9 months from when I first started doing comedy to when one of my shows that I was producing got on the cover of 96 Hours and I was selling out the Makeout Room. And partly it was that my activist skills helped my comedy because, once you know how to get 1,000 people to go on strike, getting 100 people to come to a comedy show is not that hard. And longshoremen are big. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're f-ing big. Like, they have elephantitis of the self. And so they stepped. We see it coming. We see the line of riot police. And the longshoremen just stepped into the street, started walking towards the riot police, and the police ran away. This is an important lesson that I want you to remember. When you're dealing with the police, size matters. It is no time to be a vegan. You need to bulk up, have some ribs and carbo load and a Red Bull. Some of these are jokes and some of these are tips for revolution. I just want you to take heed.
All right, that's Nato Green from the Nato Green Party. You mentioned that your union activism, that taught you, it helped you learn how to lose. And I can imagine that in your early days as a stand-up comedian, and you have an audience who may be skeptical or jokes may be falling flat or something like that, that you really have to develop a strong, thick skin. I think it's interesting about your career at this point that you drew upon this combination of experiences.
I feel like I might be a bit of a masochist. I like big risks and big projects that have a chance of making some significant impact and influencing people, but where there's more losing than winning, and where you get knocked pretty hard. And definitely, show business has at every level, from the open mic to the biggest, I feel like show business is sort of engineered to
constantly reopen wounds from high school. You're just continually in this moment of like, am I in? Am I out? Who likes me?
Very vulnerable.
Where do I rank? Do they like me when they say they like me? Are they telling the truth? Am I being left out of anything? And so there's a part of me that's like, hold on, I am a grown man and I've been through some stuff in my life. I don't have to put up with this. Oh, this feels like prom, you know? So it's sort of tricky to navigate that. But I also feel like having been involved in political fights and organizing battles that have actual stakes to them, where people's livelihoods are on the line and their health care is for their families on the line, it's made me much more able to deal with sort of inherent intrigue and ebbs and flows of trying to be a comic.
That's Nato Green. He has a new comedy CD called The Nato Green Party. Let's go ahead and listen to another clip of that. And this one reflects some of the influence, I think, of your Bay Area roots in your comedy.
I don't know if you realize this, but out there in the heartland of America, there are people preparing for war. They're learning how to shoot machine guns and live on eating ants. And we are not ready for that. They're getting ready for war. We are getting ready for brunch. Do you see the distinction I'm trying to draw for you? I'm concerned. We are not going to be able to defend freedom and democracy and tolerance with sun salutations. When they come marching into the cities from their hamlets and dales, the little towns of Miller's Outpost and Not Reading and Incest, California, or wherever the f*** they're from, with their burning torches and Uzis, we can't be like, hang on, we need to limber up. You can't kick down a door with Uggs. I hope everyone realizes that Warrior One is not an actual combat position.
That's Nato Green from the Nato Green Party. Well, right now, you're clearly on an upswing. I mean, you've got this show you're writing for with your buddy W. Kamau Bell. It's executive produced by Chris Rock, who's a long-established comic, a real name in the business. How's it been to work with him?
Chris is amazing. There's nobody, you know, I mean, he's, how often do you get to spend time with someone who is generally agreed to be one of the greatest of all time? So it's been really, for me thus far, a really interesting learning curve to translate writing for my own voice to both writing for Kamau and writing for television. In terms of what I can assume that the audience will know and understand, and how much time I have to convey an idea. And so, you know, I've been really working hard to figure out how to preserve the integrity of the kind of approach to comedy that Kamau and I developed.
When they could change the channel, when they could leave the theater.
So that's been, you know, the biggest learning experience. And, you know, and Chris Rock just has a real strong vision. I mean, he's not encouraging us to push ourselves to come up with perspectives on things that no one else is doing in comedy and take risks that, you know, that will make people uncomfortable. And, it, you know, if we pull it off, having mostly a group of unknown comics from San Francisco ride Chris Rock's coattail to having a series on FX that is as, you know, smart and hard-hitting and funny as we have been trying to be for all these years, it'll be a miracle and it'll be the exception that proves the rule, and we'll feel like we cheated the system.
That was comedian Nato Green speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. Green recently released his stand-up CD, The Nato Green Party. He's writing for the new Chris Rock-produced comedy show starring W. Kamau Bell on FX, which starts tonight. And there's a watching party for it at the Dark Room Theater in San Francisco on Mission Street, preceded by live comedy. And Green will be part of a performance at Lit Crawl in October, sponsored by KALW. And if you like food and performance, join us tomorrow. Here's KALW's Audrey Dilling with more.
At KALW, we're perfecting the recipe for community storytelling. It starts with two slices of bread, cheese, and some butter. Toss in some secret ingredients and let it sizzle. Ah! Finish it off with a dash of storytelling, and you've got KALW's first ever story slamwich. That's right, a slamwich.
brought to you by Hear Hear, a pop-up radio project. On August 10th at 7 p.m., come to Awaken Cafe in Oakland to see local personalities compete in a grilled cheese cook-off, followed by a food-themed story slam. Cast your vote for the best storyteller and help the winner get his or her story aired on KALW. That's Friday, August 10th at 7 p.m. at Awaken Cafe, right off the 12th Street BART in Oakland. Find more details at KALW.org.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now for some artery cultural coverage that's jazzy.
Chasing after rain.
Jane Monheit has had a successful career as a jazz vocalist for over 10 years. But as she reached her 30s, she's had to juggle raising a child with the vicissitudes of performing on the road. In this jazz perspective, Reese Ehrlich asks her about her 2010 CD Home and her life at home.
The birth of her son Jack, now 2 years old, has done a lot more than just change their listening habits. Jane Monheit is grappling with the issues faced by all career women.
It's been a drastic change. It's been a massive change. And, you know, honestly, it's made me enjoy my work more than I ever have before. When you're mommy all the time, no matter how much you love your child, it becomes very important to have a part of your life that's just for you. Because a happy, fulfilled parent is a better parent. And so my work has become this source of happiness in my life. It means so much more. You know, I want my son to be proud of me one day, and I want to be able to provide for him anything that he could ever want. And then, you know, I get on stage and I'm singing, and it's like this beautiful release. That's my fun time. That's my social time. That's the time for me to just be me outside of being Jack's mother. And that's really important. And he loves every second of it. I mean, his favorite thing in the world is soundcheck. He loves going to soundcheck. He comes on the road with us everywhere. He's obsessed with music. He's already playing drums like his dad. So my work is beneficial to him in so many ways. It's really just a beautiful thing. I mean, I have these two sides of my life that just mesh together so perfectly.
Doesn't taking their son on the road make life more complicated?
Yeah, we tour less now, but that's partially because of him and partially because of the economy, you know. Although, you know, slowing down with him is important, especially now. You know, it's like it's been nice to have the summer off. We're potty training. You know, it's like we're doing stuff like that. So we've been off most of the summer, but next week we start some very intense touring again to support the release of the new album.
Monheit has been a professional singer on the national stage for 10 years. That puts a lot of stress on her vocal cords. Like other vocalists, she's learned that a singer must take care of her instrument.
The sound of my voice is much different. I mean, it's been worked into the ground for the last 10 years. I have sung so much. Jazz singers sing more than anybody. And it's funny because, you know, everybody knows that I want to, you know, do Broadway one day. I'm obsessed with musical theater. And they always say to me, oh, Jane, I don't know. Eight shows a week. Can you handle it? And I'm just like, please, honey. I fly. I do 12 shows in 6 days. You know, I talk the whole time. And I never leave the stage. I sing for 80 solid minutes without leaving. I think I can handle a little musical theater. That's kid stuff.
And try to find the sunny side of life. And try to find the sunny side of life. can try to find the sunny side of life.
I'm Reese Erlich with a perspective on jazz.
Jane Monheit is playing tomorrow night at the Napa Valley Opera House in Napa. And we'd like to know what music you're into. Recommend some tracks on our Facebook page, KALW News, or tweet them at us at KALW News, all one word. That's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Erica Moo, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Mariel Wallof. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listeners of Radio. You're listening to the Junior Choir of Berkeley's Young Musicians Program. The program has been helping musically gifted students who can't afford specialized training since 1968. Students come from 60 schools in four Bay Area counties. And you can hear the program's Choral Youth Orchestra this Saturday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts starting at 7:30, and admission is free. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.